Good morning, and welcome to the Iansas Capital Q1 2018 Financial Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Instructions for the question and answer session will be provided following the listen-only portion of this call. Before beginning formal remarks, Iansas would like to remind listeners that today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements that reflect current views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risk and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in these forward-looking statements. Iansas does not undertake to update any forward-looking statements except as required. I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded on May 31st, 2018. I will now turn the call over to Hadley Ford, Iansas CEO. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jacqueline, and welcome everybody to the first quarterly earnings call of what should be a breakout year for Iansas. I have with me on the call today our COO, Carlos Perea, and our CFO, Julius Kalsovich. Many of you on the call have known us since before we went public. 3 years ago, we walked up and down Bay Street telling our story and saying what we would do. And what did we say? We said we'd raise money privately, which we did. We said we would use that capital to acquire operators and take them public on the CSE, and we became the first U.S. operator traded on that exchange. We said we would raise money publicly in Canada for use in support of our U.S. operations, and we did the first short-form prospectus equity deal ever done on the CSE. We said we would use our currency to acquire assets in the U.S., and we've done that, completing multiple acquisitions, including the largest U.S. acquisition to date, using our stock to complete tax-free reorganizations, which, as many of you know, is no small feat for a Canadian public company. You said our balance sheet was too hard to understand, so we made our balance sheet more understandable. We got rid of convoluted ownership structures and pioneered new ways to show 100% ownership of our operations in our key states. You said you were worried about our ability to fund all our great licenses, so we raised more money, both publicly and privately, culminating in our recent $50 million raise, the largest ever investment by one investor into a public cannabis company. That investment was a huge vote of confidence in our team and what our shareholders have helped us build to date. We've successfully run operations in our more mature market states of Colorado, Vermont, and New Mexico, with our operations there currently generating a run rate of close to $20 million of revenue. We've said what we were going to do, and then we did it. We've been transparent and available to our shareholders. We have listened, and we've responded. And our shareholders have been rewarded for that belief, trust, and support, with our stock outperforming all U.S. peers year-to-date, and by the way, week-to-date as well. And now we turn our attention to building out our operations in our three biggest states, Massachusetts, Florida, and New York, with an addressable market of over 48 million customers, and very little competition. We've had some good execution in the rearview mirror, but what we have in front of us is an even bigger opportunity. As you know, the past is not always prologue in the financial markets, and even less so in cannabis. But we'll take our chances with the over 100 Iansas employees that have done what they've said they would do, have never given up, and have a fierce determination to delight our customers every day. In the 4 years since we started Iansas, I've never been so excited and confident about the prospects of our company. We have the footprint, we have the money, and we have the people. The regulatory environment on the federal and local level has never been better. All those angry white men down in D.C. agree, cannabis is the future. Full rec starts this year in Massachusetts, and Governor Cuomo of New York has said that full rec is inevitable in the state. Operationally, we have licenses in place to build out grows, manufacturing, and over 35 dispensaries across our four East Coast states. And despite our stock being up over 60% year to date, we are still undervalued versus our U.S. peers and way undervalued versus the metrics used to judge the Canadian operators. This despite the fact we compete in a much bigger market, have many fewer competitors, and sell directly to the end user. I want to thank all our shareholders for their support to date. We would not be here without you. And I want to encourage you to watch your tickers for the remainder of 2018 for the multiple catalysts and developments that we have ready to go. I'd now like to ask Julius Kalsovich, our CFO, to review our first quarter results.
Perfect. Thank you, Hadley. So first off, all of the following numbers are stated in U.S. dollars. I'll provide an overview of our financial statements, but I would also encourage any investor to download our full Q1 reporting package from SEDAR or from our website for the entire disclosure. The company reported $3.2 million of revenue in Q1 2018 compared to $300,000 in Q1 2017. This quarter is notable as our statements included cannabis sales revenue for the first time due to the fully consolidated operations in Vermont and our pilot delivery program in Florida. With the rapid rollout and opening of our dispensaries, there will be significant growth of this line item in subsequent quarters. Our revenue also included a $2.6 million gain in fair value adjustment on the transformation of biological assets. The recognition of this asset gain is required under IFRS standards and is a non-cash amount. However, it does indicate that the company's cultivation operations are well underway and creating value for Ianthus. The net loss for the quarter was approximately $600,000 or 1 cent per share, compared to a loss of approximately $1.9 million or 7 cents per share for Q1 2017. The decrease in the net loss is primarily due to a significant non-cash fair value adjustment on the derivatives attached to the debenture that were issued by Ianthus in January 2018. I would also like to state that due to the nature of our industry and the nature of our company and capital structure, readers of our financial statements will see various non-cash adjustments that relate to derivatives which are embedded in debenture issuances, currency, foreign exchange, which stem from the fact we are a Canadian public company with all of our operating assets in the U.S., transformation of biological assets, which are reflected in our revenue line. These are all required under IFRS standards, and we have tried to document the necessary disclosures in our financial statements to further inform investors. At the end of the quarter, assets are now at $124 million, which is a $78 million increase quarter over quarter, primarily due to the acquisitions of Sativa and Grow Healthy. The company received $5.1 million from the Green Solution in February and April 2018, respectively, representing $4 million of principal repayment and accrued interest. The remaining $3.5 million balance and accrued interest is expected to be received at the end of July 2018. While press released 2 weeks ago, Ianthus has also closed on a $50 million investment from Gotham Green Partners, which has allowed Ianthus to repay our $20 million note to VCP Bridge, as well as fund our balance sheet for the ongoing development programs in New York and Florida. From a general business perspective, I would also like to highlight some of the following updates and highlights in Massachusetts. Mayflower's cultivation facility is fully operational. We have 15 different strains under cultivation and over 2,500 plants, and the processing of plant material into extracted products is well underway. Mayflower's flagship dispensary in Boston has received the approval to sell from the Massachusetts Department of Public Health and is expected to open in the summer of 2018. While our dispensary is fully ready to open and fully staffed, the City of Boston has required all upcoming operators to have a final public consultation as part of the rollout of the recreational program. At this point, there's still only one open dispensary within the City of Boston, and we believe that we will be the second one open in the next month. We are excited that we will announce our second dispensary location next week as the regulatory process draws to a close. Our location is fully leased and the dispensary will open in mid-Q4 2018. More details will be provided next week. For our third dispensary location, we've acquired an option to lease in Worcester, which is the second largest city within the state. We are proceeding with the necessary regulatory process at the local level. We will also continue to evaluate other options within the state as well for our third location. And lastly, the company is extremely enthusiastic for the state's recreational cannabis program, which is expected to begin on July 1st, 2018, and be rolled out throughout 2018 on a municipal and local basis. Moving now on to Florida. Florida remains the fastest growing medical market in the U.S., and Ianthus is accelerating the development of its operations within the state. Grow Healthy's recently launched pilot delivery program generated approximately $16,000 in the quarter, but more importantly, it has helped to provide significant insights as to patient preferences in advance of our dispensary openings. More than 25,000 square feet of the cultivation and processing facility in Lake Wales has been built out, with an additional 175,000 square feet of space available for continued cultivation and expansion. At the close of this quarter, the cultivation facility housed over 2,400 plants representing 70 different strains. The company has signed 4 leases for dispensary locations in West Palm Beach, Orlando, Tampa, and Deerfield Beach, representing an aggregate retail space of almost 14,000 square feet. We're constantly evaluating additional locations and will continue to announce leases and openings throughout the year. On the regulatory front, it's also very notable that last week a judge from the Florida Circuit Court ruled that Florida's current ban on smokable medical marijuana is unconstitutional. While the Florida Department of Health has appealed the ruling, the company believes that this is a step in a positive direction for increased patient access to medical marijuana and accelerated growth in the Florida market. Moving on to New York, I'm pleased to announce we've closed on the acquisition of 8.5 acres of land in Warwick, New York, the location of the company's planned 40,000-square-foot modular cultivation and processing facility. We also continue to proceed with wholesale supply contracts as well as dispensary leases and location development for our 4 assigned counties, with Brooklyn and Staten Island scheduled to open in Q4 of this year. Quick update on Vermont. The facility-wide upgrade during Q1 2018, which resulted in approximately 50% of the cultivation capacity going offline, temporarily going offline. The upgrades are now complete and include a new commercial kitchen, improved processing facilities, and additional grow space that has doubled the capacity in that facility. A lease for a second dispensary location to be located in Williston, Vermont has been executed and is pending state approval. I also want to take a moment to discuss some of the assets that are not currently consolidated in our financials. In New Mexico, we hold a 25% minority stake in operator Reynolds Greenleaf. Revenue in Q1 2018 totaled $3.2 million, representing a 32% increase from the comparable period in 2017. Since we do not have majority ownership of this asset, we only record gains, losses on our income statement under the line item profits from investment in associate, as opposed to a full consolidation of their financials. In Colorado, we own all non-cannabis assets of Organics based in Breckenridge. Current state regulatory restrictions prevent the company from consolidating the financial results of Organics. Revenue in Q1 2018 totaled $1.5 million, representing a 17% increase year over year. Organics also achieved record sales of approximately $600,000 in the month of March 2018. Organics provides valuable insights into the advanced Colorado market and various trends relevant to the broader industry. We remain optimistic that pending legislation in Colorado, if passed and signed into law, may permit the company to consolidate Organics' financial results in the future. I will conclude with our current share count. We have 66 million common and Class A shares, broken down into 49 million common shares and an additional 17 million Class A shares. Our Class A are convertible on a one-for-one basis into common shares. In terms of dilutive securities, we have approximately 42 million shares outstanding, which include 21.5 million common share warrants and approximately 13 million shares that result from our convertible high-yield notes. At this point, we'll turn over the call to our operator for questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Matt Bottomley from Canaccord Genuity. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions, guys.
Thank you, Matt.
Great. So just a few on my end. First, kudos on the MD&A. It actually answers a lot of it. Very well laid out. Has a good summary of all your assets. But maybe just to touch on a few of the states, maybe with Florida, think I asked this last quarter, so I'm just wondering if you're seeing any increased traction in the home delivery. Obviously, it hit the statements this quarter, but how are you seeing the market evolving when it comes to all these dispensaries being rolled out? I think every licensee has 25 or the option to open up 25. Where do you see the home delivery going, let's say, over the next two quarters? Do you expect it to stay at the modest level it's at now, or is there significant trajectory on the upward side based on consumer preferences?
Matt, we have our COO, Carlos, on the phone. He's actually in Florida right now. I think he can speak to the home delivery piece and the strategy going forward. Carlos?
Hey, Matt. So the reality is we've kept that program very modest. We've had one vehicle. We very purposely have been selective in taking on business there. We've been ironing out the logistics and the issues and technologies associated with home delivery. But we're in the process of adding a second vehicle and staffing that endeavor out. We expect it to be a pretty rapidly growing portion of the business. It will be relatively small or dwarfed, obviously, once we bring on not just one, but three dispensaries within a very short time frame. But I continue to see it growing very aggressively, and it will be very much an integral part of our strategy in Florida.
Okay, then, great. Maybe then in terms of the potential for wholesale, just trying to think of the best way to think of Florida's contribution to your financials over the next two quarters, given that there's capacity now and the dispensaries are still being ramped up. So any thoughts of wholesaling to other operators?
Yeah, unfortunately, we would love to because we have the production capacity, and we're actually expanding that production capacity very aggressively given the dispensaries that we're bringing online. The wholesale market in Florida is pretty restrictive. It really amounts to a wholesale loss of a crop or in certain circumstances, ensuring that there is availability of product, but it's not a free market, if you will, where we can actually just take our excess capacity and move that around, unfortunately. At least not today. We hope to see that change in the future.
Okay, thanks. And just moving to Massachusetts, just wondering on any high-level commentary on how you see that market evolving, in the back half of this year and into 2019. I mean, there's something like 25 dispensaries open today, as Hadley mentioned. IANSA will have sort of one of two maybe to start in Boston. When you look at other states that have 500 dispensaries plus and much lower population. Where do you see that market evolving in terms of additional dispensaries or licensees coming online? It just seems like there's not that much infrastructure set up to support what's going to be a very large recreational demand coming online.
Matt, that's a great question. I'll start and I'll turn it over to Carlos. You know, one of the things we often like when we pick a market from a strategic perspective is what we call a barriers to entry type of market. And Massachusetts, despite at the surface saying there's an unlimited number of licenses, over the last 3 to 4 years, the program has only allowed a handful of dispensaries to open. That has a lot to do with the way the state and local governments interact with each other. But that, while difficult to get something open, has created a large barrier to entry. We do think that the customers in the state will be underserved because of this, but we do think that the people who are open, including our location in Boston and the one that we'll announce next week, will do quite well because of the difficulty in the process the state has overlaid on that. Carlos, do you have any additional color to add on that?
Yeah, just to build off that, Hadley, certainly we think the state will respond to an over demand under supply situation. We certainly are preparing for that ourselves. Even though we've had a few delays in getting our dispensary open, our big focus there really is on building up the product inventory. I think the good news is not just with recreational around the corner, but with a very robust medical market, I think you'll see us come out of the gate much stronger in terms of the product portfolio and just having available product to the patients and then ultimately the adult users. So we're very, very bullish on the overall market for us. But you're right, Matt. We will for sure be putting pressure on the state to expand capacity and availability.
Okay, thanks, guys. And last question on my end, more of a housekeeping item. But with the TGS loan being collected and and Colorado's organics not being consolidated into the financials. How does that work from a cash flow statement? You guys own the asset, on a technical level. So are you collecting that cash, or what's happening to the resulting cash flow from that $1.5 million quarterly top line in organics? I know it's not on your revenue, but just trying to just shore up my valuation a bit in terms of how that's incorporated.
Julius, you want to jump in on this one?
Sure. Yeah. So Matt, where the way that we've teed everything up in Colorado with organics, that there's a series of management companies that have contractual fees that come from the actual operator. And those are sort of set fees. And then at the end of a year, we will do a sort of cash flow sweep into the parent. Through 2017, there were some reinvestments in the cultivation facility, some reinvestments in the dispensary. So from a cash flow perspective in 17, it was neutral. What we look forward to, especially with the momentum we're seeing in the first quarter, is that there will be cash being built up over the year, and then at the end of the year from the actual operator, anything over and above sort of the set contractual fees, which add up to the set contractual fees are sort of in the range of $25,000 to $30,000 a year. Anything beyond that, $25,000 to $30,000 a month. Anything beyond that at the end of the year will be swept out from the operator. So there'll be sort of a true up at the end of 2018.
Okay, so Matt, sorry, Hadley.
Oh, I was going to say, and the hopefully potentially good news, I think the date is June 11th. Governor Hickenlooper has to that time to either sign legislation or not sign it, in which case it does go into effect, or veto whether or not public companies can have ownership. If that goes forward, hopefully at some point in early 2019, we'll be able to consolidate all those revenues and cash flows and look just like a 100% owned entity like our other four key states on the East Coast.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Jesse Pitlock from Cormac. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Jesse.
Just kind of want to circle back to Mayflower, Massachusetts for a second here. So from my understanding, it sounds like the city of Boston will do licensing reapprovals in the coming week or two. But beyond that, are there any other licensing hurdles in order for you to be able to sell recreationally once that market opens in July?
No, there's no other. Well, we say no other. It's cannabis. But, we don't anticipate any other, although the city, depending upon how they drag their feet, may allow recreational in July, August, September. But, the process is straightforward. It just drags along. And, that's kind of what we found ourselves wrapped up in here with the city currently. But we don't anticipate any issues with opening. It's really just a matter of the bureaucratic process grinding forward for us.
Okay. And then just kind of looking to Florida now, looks like you added a lease in Deerfield. And I think at the end of last quarter, you said your plans were to add five new leases through the end of the year. So is it fair to assume now that you should probably be announcing four more leases between now and the end of this year?
Carlos, are we at four, or have we exceeded that at this point?
So the way I think of this is we have the three locations that are under construction. And when I say construction, I think one of them is still an architectural or late architectural, but contractors have been selected and there's some level of modifications of the building. In those three, there's three that are in the design phase, one of which we've announced the lease, that's Deerfield. But there are two other leases that are essentially completed in terms of negotiated terms, and we actually have design work started on those two locations. And then we have five other potential locations behind that. So our goal this year is to have 10 announced. I have no problem feeling confident we'll exceed that. I'm more worried about getting them open. And at this stage, it looks like four is a pretty sure thing, and maybe a fifth by end of the year will actually be operational. But, the lease process is moving along very nicely, and you'll hear, I think, in the next week or two more announcements of signed leases.
Okay, that's great. And then just looking to New York now, Just when you look at the wholesale market there, is there enough supply that you'll be able to fully stock both Brooklyn and Staten Island, or will you have somewhat of a limited product selection at the opening, or what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, we're definitely wishing for a more robust market, for sure. We are in the process of actually not just exploring wholesale options as it relates to buying processed oil, but as it relates to buying product in flower form that we can process. We're even evaluating, does it make sense to white label or carry other people's products? Unfortunately, it's probably not just a raw supply issue. It's probably a quality and availability at a price point that we think will actually move the market. But to answer your question, yeah, we'll have pretty limited availability in the first quarter or so, maybe even the first two quarters of those dispensaries, certainly relative to what we would like. And that's why we're accelerating plans to put in not only the cultivation but the processing capability in our site in Warwick. And you'll see more about that production capability as well as the processing plans. Also here within the next month, we'll be doing some public announcements on that capacity.
Okay, that's all I got, guys. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Jesse.
Your last question comes from Russell Stanley from Echelon. Your line is open.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Russ.
Just a first question here with regards to Florida and, pardon me, in the legal battle around smokable products. How do you anticipate that playing out? And as a follow-up, do you see perhaps a similar evolution in New York?
Our longer-term view pretty much across the whole industry is, and many of you heard me say this, you don't want to spend your time, money, treasure in the business if you don't think it's going to be regular way. So our anticipation is at some point we'll have smokable product in Florida. We also think that the pressure on New York will become very strong once Mass is full rec and New Jersey is full rec. And I can't imagine Mayor de Blasio or Governor Cuomo are going to let guys take the PATH train over to Secaucus and spend their hard-earned money to enrich the tax coffers of New Jersey for very long before they push forward with the full rec program. There's been a lot of press down here. Both the New York Post and the Daily News have come out in support of full recreational cannabis. Cuomo's competition for the Democratic primary, the governor, Cynthia Nixon, has come out in full support of rec, and even Cuomo himself has said it's inevitable. So we see this really as just the continued rock rolling down the hill, state by state by state, all across the United States. We all know where it's going to end up. It's just really a matter of when.
Great. Thank you for that. And just a follow-up question on Colorado, assuming that regulations are, in fact, signed that allow you to consolidate your investments there, does that make Colorado potentially a more attractive expansion target for you going forward, or is that a market that perhaps is a bit too competitive at this point?
No, I think it makes it very compelling. You'll recall, you go back a year and a half, that was one of the first strategic things we're going to do, and then we got hamstrung by the state and approval processes and all the rigmarole involved in the accounting and whatnot. So we hit the pause button in Colorado and pivoted to some opportunities here in the East Coast. But I think if Governor Hickenlooper and signs legislation and public company ownership is going to be allowed, we're going to take a good look at the strategy again. There's a lot of opportunity in that state. We think states you really have to pick, such as a California and Oregon. You really have to pick your opportunities and make sure that you're well positioned. But that's what we have experience in doing in the states that we're already operating in. So we will definitely be taking a look at it if the legislation gets passed.
Excellent. Thank you for the color. That's all I had.
Great. Thank you very much.
There are no further questions. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Appreciate that. And thank you all for dialing in today to hear about our first quarter. I want to reiterate again that we think this is going to be a breakout year for us. We've got a lot of good news on the horizon. Operationally, we'll be rolling out in our three big key states, and we should have a lot of good news on harvests and processing and dispensaries opening up. We look forward to good news. We look forward to your continued support, and thank you all for dialing in.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.